And we're joined this time around by two gentlemen, Ron Kraft and Mike Bouchard, who had a very pivotal role in a very unique operation that took place on the 5th of September, 1983. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You were both crew chiefs on a KC-135 that was involved in a very unique rescue mission where you ended up literally towing an F-4 Phantom to safety over the North Atlantic. Tell us the story.
Well, okay, we only have a few minutes here, so we're going to try and give you the Reader's Digest version.
Good, good.
So this was a tanker task force that assembled in Pease Air Force Base, New Hampshire, and we were our mission was to escort F-4s coming out of Seymour Johnson and who were going to Ramstein, Germany. We were en route to Mildenhall, England. About halfway across the Atlantic, one of the F-4s had engine problems and was rapidly deteriorating. So he immediately diverted to
Gander,
Newfoundland, which was the closest piece of dirt. We were literally midway across the Atlantic.
So he's just made a 180. He's going back home.
Yeah. Yep. He banked a hard left, and he was trying to get there as fast as he could. But we're losing the one engine and some of his flight controls. He was unable to stay straight, so his aircraft was starting to yaw left and unable to turn right, and he was losing altitude.
He did not have enough thrust on his remaining engine. It was overheating, so he had to cut back on the power. He had one engine dead, one engine on reduced power, so he was slowly losing altitude, and he wasn't going to make it. And we were six tankers carrying 24 F-4Es from Seymour Johnson to Germany as part of Reforger. It's a big war game back then, return of forces to Germany. And we had two KC-10s that carried them from Seymour Johnson up the coast to Nova Scotia, where the six KC-135s picked them up, headed across the Atlantic. And one of our birds, each tanker, each 135 had four chicks, four F-4s, and one of ours lost an engine, and the other one was overheating. He had lost half of his hydraulic systems. So the call was made to divert, and we were assigned to go chase after him and help him get to safety.
So as crew chiefs on the KC, were they consulting or asking you questions about what to do or with the F-4?
Not really. No? They knew what they had to do.
Okay.
Our job was to prep the aircraft for the flight. An interesting thing about all of this is that just prior to the flight, in a matter of a couple of days, somebody had come out to check the hours that were available on my boom, and his comment was, "Yeah, you got a few hours left. I think you can do a 45-day trip to England." And I said, no. If I'm getting a tired boom, I want a fresh boom, because I'm not going to England with a tanker that has looring up on the tail just to sit there on strip alert waiting for something to happen, because my boom is about to expire on hours, and they're not going to do a boom inspection over there because it would cost them money.
Right.
So in a situation like that, they put you on a job where you probably won't fly, but if you have to fly, well, we can do it. So I went and got some help from a guy with a lot more stripes than me, and we got somebody to come out there that night and change the boom. So we had a fresh boom. We had a fresh fork inspection. We had a fresh boom. And I can only say that perhaps that helped.
With the mission.
Yeah.
So the F-4 is one engine's out, one's overheating. They're trying to get back there over the North Atlantic. So the options at this point are pretty limited for the crew. I mean, it's basically eject, and there's no real safety or survival equipment. That's
not at that distance.
No. And then also another point was the ocean temperature at that point was 32 degrees. So they would have only had a few minutes of useful consciousness.
Right.
So shortly after him diverting, we get the call, and I had the headsets on, and I heard him say, "Go get him." And being my first mission, my first time flying, I'm thinking, what the heck are we going to do with 22 passengers on board? We had 22 passengers on board. So we turned and went full throttle to where he was supposed to be, caught up to him, and had to roll back to idle and descend to his altitude, which was really, really low. Our boom operator extraordinaire had made the connection in these adverse conditions at the first shot, and we started to climb out and give him a little altitude. And at that point, his F4 is dead weight, and he's bending our boom like you're bringing a bass out of the lake with your Zebco 202. And I couldn't believe how much it was bending and not breaking. And the boom operator commented to me, you know, we both thought it was going to break off, and we were going to watch him go into water. But it held on, and we got a little altitude, but he had broken off from a brute force disconnect, tailed over, and went into another dive. So we had to come around again and perform the same procedure over. The second time we hooked up and leveled off, we were only approximately 1,600 feet off the water. We were watching the waves break, and we could see white caps at that point. And the navigator made the comment, "My God, we're low." Yeah. And so this is the point, I believe, where they deployed SARS, search and rescue. But from that hookup, we gained a little more altitude, slower this time, learning lessons and gaining confidence. You know, from the first attempt, he still broke off, went around, and we went in for a third hookup. Again, more confidence, more experience. And we climbed out even slower, only getting up to about 10,000 feet, and leveled off, and we were able to tow him for as many miles as he needed to cool off his other engine. We saw his aircraft climbing up our boom, meaning he could sustain flight on his own. So we disconnected but stayed in that attitude, that position, just in case we need to rehook up.
We were talking with Major General Lewis earlier in the show, and he was talking about the typical tanker profile, and that is the aircraft coming up to the tanker is coming up at about a 30-degree angle.
Right.
Now, I just want folks to realize that you're talking about hooking up in a downward position, which is totally out of spec.
That is way out of the envelope. Yeah. That is what we did right there is not something at that time that was even considered or practiced or anything like that. We were way out of the envelope for normal in-flight refueling, let alone flying a KC-135 that low across the Atlantic. He was down to just minutes.
Right.
He was down to just minutes. He at 1,600 feet. You better be having your straps tight because you're going to be punching out here shortly.
Yeah.
But the cohesion amongst the members of the crew, the pilot and the boom operator, were flying the airplane and flying the boom. The navigator and the co-pilot were working the radios, talking with Gander Newfoundland, talking with us. Well, they were coordinating with the SAR, the search and rescue outfit.
Plotting routes.
Yep. And you know, the passengers on board the aircraft, we had done a second crew briefing where we had told them basically in a nice way, shut up and sit down, don't move. And things were very tense, but things were very cool. There was no elevated shouting. There was no
anxiety.
Professional.
Yep. And as a credit to Bob Goodman, Bob Goodman was the pilot. He's dead now. Rest in peace. He had done in his younger years, he had been a pilot that towed gliders.
Yes.
And somewhere in the events that have taken place since, I heard that he had made the comment that because of his experience towing aircraft, he was able to mentally put his flying abilities to use in that mode. Typically, you know, if we're up at 20,000 feet, flying in orbit, waiting for receivers to come up and get fuel, that's very vanilla.
Right.
And what we did there, I mean, that was way beyond vanilla.
Yes. So you literally towed the F4 for about 160 miles before they broke off and landed safely in Gander.
Let's clarify that. That fighter had a little bit of thrust.
Okay.
But he did not have enough to even maintain level flight.
So he had enough to stay with the boom.
A little bit of thrust, but we gave him enough of a pull to help pull him back up to 10,000.
That's amazing.
Right.
Gentlemen, you're going to tell this entire story tonight at Theater in the Woods.
Saturday.
There's Saturday. Saturday. Tomorrow night.
Yep.
So there's much more to it
that
we were able to cover in this segment, but I just wanted to give folks a taste of this just incredible mission and the professionalism that that you and the entire crew on both aircraft showed. And your first times here at Oshkosh?
Yes. Okay. Not the last.
Not the last.
That's what we
We're
like
making
to
reservations for next year now.
And also, I'd like to share with everybody the fact that this is being made into a book of Ron.
Oh, okay.
A book and a movie.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We will watch for it.
Yeah. Hell Over High Water. It'll be out later this summer, and we're working on screenplay now.
Excellent. Hell Over High Water. Watch for that, for the release of that. That sounds like a perfect title for for that mission.
Thank you. I thought so.
And that is our show for today. Tomorrow, we're going to talk with Christine Mao, who is an F-35 pilot and a brand new RV owner. She just she's got both ends of the spectrum there. Also, Lieutenant General Marianne Miller will talk about the Year of the Tanker, and EIA's Chris Henry will discuss his recent involvement in the B-17 Memphis Belle dedication at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio. And that is our program for today, made possible by the Commemorative Air Force. CAF's mission is education so that generations of Americans will value and support the contributions of military aviation in assuring our nation's freedom. Visit CAF's website, commemorativeairforce.org, for more information. I'm Steve Buss, and you're listening to EIA Radio.